Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, got it! Got it! Got it! 33!
Center field, Marsh leaps, and he got it!
It normally.
High fly ball, deep left field. Oh, 27 does it again
for this year.
Wall sends it well out to left center field, and it's gone. He went to Jared.
Way
diving catch, Jordan Dell.
This is Brandon Marsh, the Los Angeles Angels baseball. You listen to All Angels Podcasts.
And welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. I am your host, Daniel Garcia. So first off, I hope everyone had a great and safe 4th of July. Hope everyone had fun, fireworks, drinks aplenty, and most importantly, hope everyone stayed safe. So after the off day on Monday by the Angels, they were down in Miami for a quick 2-game series. And considering the pitching matchups for this series, I'm happy with a series split. Obviously, the Angels dropping the first game on Tuesday and having a normal Otani dominating game on Wednesday. So let's talk a little bit about that game on Tuesday. Like I mentioned, day off on Monday for 4th of July. If you didn't hear the last podcast, I don't understand why MLB doesn't make 4th of July the equivalent of the Thanksgiving holiday for the NFL or the Christmas holiday for the NBA. I think 4th of July would be a perfect time for that. Because like during Labor Day, Memorial Day, at the ends of the summer, book ends of the summer, you always have like another sport, whether it's football or basketball, competing with the Major League Baseball at the time. But during the 4th of July, during that time period, the only thing that is going on is baseball. And I think it'd be perfect to have all the games, all the teams play games on that day. But again, hopefully that's something they figure out in the future. So Tuesday, Angels down in Miami. And I talked about this a little bit last podcast. And a lot of people, not just myself, but had a feeling that if the Angels were going to win this game, it had to be a pitching duel. And for the most part, it was. Obviously, you have Sandy Alcantara on the mound for the Marlins. This guy is probably the favorite in the NL right now for the Cy Young. Definitely looking like going to be the all-star starter for the NL. He has been on fire. He has like 19 more innings pitched than any other pitcher in baseball. Plus, his strikeout numbers are crazy. Plus, his ERA numbers are crazy. He is a guy that any team would feel fortunate to have at the top of their rotation. So Noah Syndergaard had the chance, the duty, if you will, to keep this game close. It was on him to keep it close and make it a pitching duel. And to Noah Syndergaard's credit, he did exactly that. One of his two only blemishes came in the bottom of the third when he gave up a solo home run to Garrett Cooper, making the score 1-0. And again, he did his job. He kept it close. The Angels were never not in scoring territory, if you will, keeping the ball game within, you know, two runs, obviously. In the bottom of the fifth, he would give up his second mistake to Brian De La Cruz for a solo shot, his sixth of the year, making it 2-0. And with Sandy pitching, that is really all he would need, because again, he put out another dominating performance. Sandy Alcantara went 8 innings, 2 hits, and 10 strikeouts for a team that And the Angels that have been really, really struggling offensively, this, you had a feeling this wasn't going to be a great matchup. The two hits the Angels were able to scratch across came from Mike Trout and Luis Renjifo. But to know, again, to Noah Syndergaard's credit, he kept this game very, very close. He went five innings, giving up five hits and those two solo shot home runs while striking out eight. Yes, you would like to see him go deeper. I think one of his biggest things too right now is his efficiency when throwing pitches and trying to get, you know, ground outs and all that stuff. So he went five innings over 92 pitches. So again, not a bad outing by any means, but if there was one thing to kind of nitpick and you want to hope to see get better, is that five inning performance turns into, you know, obviously six or seven. Eight, like Sandy did for the Marlins, is pretty rare nowadays. And if you look at the numbers of how many eight inning starts he has, he's again above the major league best in that. But again, Syndergaard, you know, relatively really good game. Again, only those two solo shots that really cost the Angels this game. Paguero came in, got into a little bit of trouble over two innings, gave up three hits, no strikeouts, but it was pretty much clean run-wise. Ortega came in for a third of an inning. Same thing. He walked a couple guys, got into a little bit of trouble, but was able to work out of it. Jaime Barea came in for the last two outs of the Angels pitching clean inning. So a little bit, again, with this bullpen, it just feels like you never really know what you're going to get. Very up and down, very hot and cold. But again, when you're facing a pitcher like Alcantara for the Marlins, you have to be on top of your game. And pitching-wise, the Angels were. But offensively, the struggles still continue. But like I mentioned, a lot of teams struggle with this guy. So I wouldn't read too much into it. You knew going into the series when you saw the matchup that this was going to be a really difficult game for the Angels to pull away. You knew it was going to have to take some kind of offensive explosion from somebody, you know, maybe one or two runs somewhere around that lineup that just never happened. The Angels' only run did come in the ninth inning when it did get a little bit kind of tricky and it did get a little bit exciting towards the ninth inning because after Sandy was relieved, Tanner Scott, came in for that ninth inning, and right away he gave up a single to Michael Stefanik, his first major league base hit as he pitched hit for Andrew Velasquez. So with him on first and Jonathan Villar striking out, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani would go back-to-back walks, loading the bases for Taylor Ward. Taylor Ward was only able to get a sac fly to score the one run the Angels scored, making it 2-1. But Jared Walsh right after that was not able to come up clutch like we've seen him do so many times and would line out, and that would be the ball game. Angels lose 2-1 against Miami. But like I mentioned, you knew it had to be a pitching duel type of game to keep it close for the Angels to have a shot, and they had a shot all game long. So for the pitching side of the Angels, they did exactly what their job was, and that was, again, keep it close, try to survive. Sandy, you knew sooner or later he was going to get out. You knew it would probably be later in the game, and you're just hoping at that time it was in striking distance, and they got it exactly what they wanted. One out, bases loaded. But again, offensive struggles continue for the Angels, and we're only able to scratch across one run in that situation. So we go from Tuesday to Wednesday, where Shohei Ohtani gets on the mound, and I got a feeling in the morning he just said this.
Fine. I'll do it myself.
It's always a fun time to see Ohtani on the mound. You just feel like something, especially as of late, especially this last month and a half, you just have a feeling every time you watch him, something special is going to happen on him, at either on the mound or at the plate. And it's must-watch territory for Ohtani anytime he's on the mound. Angels defense, though, would kind of let him down a little bit in the bottom of the first when the very first batter for the Marlins, John Breete, reaches on a throwing error by Luis Renjifo. He would later come around and score off a sac fly from Garrett Cooper, making it 1-0. Ohtani had like an 11-inning scoreless streak coming into this. Technically, I guess you can say now it is a earned scoreless streak, because that was an unearned run on Ohtani's record. So when you look at his box score for the game, you'll still see a big fat zero in the earned run column, which is great because it was a hard way to start the game. Again, the very first batter up to the plate, you're thinking as a pitcher you're going to get that first out of the game, which, again, for Angels pitchers just seems to be the hardest one. But he was able to work out of it, only giving up that one run off a sac fly. Ohtani was settled down after that, and the Angels offense finally were able to get him a little bit of run support when in the fifth inning, Mike Trout comes up to the plate with the bases loaded and gets hit by a pitch, which scores a run, making the score 1-1. And as a offense that is struggling to produce runs, I'm guessing Trout would say the same thing. You will get it any way you can, whether it's hit by pitch, walk with the bases loaded, a bloop base hit. A run's a run at this point with the way this offense is struggling. But Ohtani, who is the very next man up the plate, again, does it himself.
And he does. Goes the other way, points towards the dugout. One run comes in. Another comes in. Angels take a 3-1 lead. Shohei Ohtani.
That score would stay the same all the way to the top of the seventh, when after a Villar single, an Ohtani walk, and a double steal by those guys putting base runners at third and second, Taylor Ward would come up and get this RBI shot.
Oh, that's Taylor Ward getting it done. Runners in scoring position. Drives in one. 4-1, Angels over the Marlins.
And to put the cherry on top of that seventh inning, the very next batter was Luis Renjifo, and he added a little more insurance.
Renjifo up the middle, and that gets down. That's going to be an RBI knock. Ohtani scores, 5-1, Angels lead.
After that top of the seven and all that run support, Ohtani would come out for the bottom of the seventh and just keep on doing what he's doing and shut the Marlins down. He would finish the game going seven innings, giving up two hits, one run, again, one run, zero earned runs, only walking three and 10 strikeouts, lowering his ERA to 2.44. He did all that on 100 pitches. So again, 100 pitches, seven innings. I think that is like the money zone. If you can get to the seventh, get through seven innings at around 100 pitches, I think for the modern pitcher, that is perfect. And I think that is something that every pitcher should be striving for, because if your team's good, you should be able to hold the lead the eighth and ninth inning. So going into that eighth and ninth inning, Ryan Tepera would come in, walk the very first batter he faces, which I don't know about you guys, but in the back of my head, I'm thinking like, oh my God, they cannot let this slip away. They have a 4-run lead, which should be plenty, and they should be able to hold it down. Luckily, Tepera does get out of that inning, only surrendering that one walk. Rossell Iglesias comes in the ninth in a non-save opportunity. He struggles a little bit, and we all know about how he kind of, like I said, struggles a little bit with non-save opportunities. Again, same thing, walks the opening batter, the first batter of the inning, which is never good regardless of who you are pitching wise. Pass ball allows Jose Aguilar to advance to second. After a couple outs, a fly out and a ground out, that run would come around the score, making it 5-2. Angels gives up a single to Brian Anderson, but was able to work out of that, making Miguel Rojas fly out for the third out. Angels win 5-2. Ohtani just absolutely dominates again. He is something that I think as fans, it is very hard to understand what we are seeing in front of us and what we are witness to, because this stuff, and you'll see it from people tweeting out stuff after almost every outing, that this stuff doesn't happen every day. This stuff doesn't happen every 10 years. This stuff happens, you know, we're talking about generationally, you know, stats that haven't happened since, you know, Babe Ruth and whoever. Sometimes it's the first time ever, but it is very, very, it's fun to see this. It's fun to see Shohei Ohtani, and, you know, from the guy that was struggling to stay healthy his first couple years in baseball, to see what he's doing this last year and this year is something that is unbelievable. And quick shout out to Jeff Fletcher, OC Register. We had him on Fingers crossed. I'm going to reach out to him at the All-Star break and see if we can have him on for two reasons. To talk about this Angel team and where he sees going forward into the trade deadline and all that stuff. But two, to talk about his book. The Ohtani book has come out. The Showtime, it's the book he wrote. We had him on during the offseason to talk about it when it was during his pre-sale. But now it's out. I highly suggest go out and buy it. And if you're not, if you're like myself, you're not much of a reader, you find it hard to find time to sit down and actually read a book. But luckily for myself and maybe you out there, it is on Audible and it's very easy to listen to. I'm at work, I pop it in and I pop in my AirPods and I listen to it. Showtime, the inside story of Shohei Ohtani in the greatest baseball season ever played. And it just shows you his maturation from, you know, him being a kid to what he is now and the hard work he puts in. And now it's awesome to kind of understand that backstory of what he was going through with his injuries and trying to understand what to do and how to make himself better, to now it seems to be really, really paying off. And that is something that is a lot of fun. And I highly, highly recommend checking it out. And again, if you're not a huge reader like myself, or you just have a hard time finding time to read but can listen to a podcast or listen to the radio, buy it on Audible. Audible is like you pay like $15 a month and you get like a credit for a book. So truth be told, I bought the $15 credit. I got the Ohtani book and you only finish this Ohtani book, and then I'll probably cancel my subscription so I don't have to pay for another $15. So that's kind of how I'm playing it out. But anytime you see Ohtani, anytime you see these crazy numbers by, you know, the Angels PR are putting him out like crazy when he's out there, and it's just really, really fun to see some of the names that he is being compared to and some of the names that he is honestly surpassing. This one from Sarah Langs on Twitter: Shohei Ohtani is the first player since RBIs became official in 1920 with 10 plus strikeouts, multiple RBI, and a stolen base in a game. Five had almost done it with one RBI instead of the multiples, and all these guys are from like 1989, 1968, 1967. I mean, like I said, generations ago. So it is absolutely crazy. Also, too, last one before, I mean, we can go on and on with Ohtani and just what he's been able to achieve. This one again from Angels PR on Twitter: pitchers to go 5-0 with 46 plus strikeouts and one or fewer earned runs in a 5-game span. Shohei Ohtani, and obviously going on right now, Chris Sale in 2018, Robbie Ray in 17, Clayton Kershaw in 14, R.A. Dickey, wow, I haven't heard that name in a while, in 2012, Randy Johnson 1997, Fernando Valenzuela in 1981, and Ray Culp, I don't know who that is, in 1968. But still, you hear a lot of those names. You know, Sale, hopefully he gets healthy, but he's a dominant pitcher when he's healthy. Same thing with Ray. Kershaw, gonna be a Hall of Famer. Randy Johnson, gonna be a Hall, or is a Hall of Famer. So, you know, the future is bright for Ohtani if he can stay healthy. But it's always a great, great time watching Ohtani on the mound just dominate, and not to mention what pretty much, like I said, he did it himself. He, at the plate, he was able to, you know, knock in those couple RBIs and for the most part win the game by himself. And it's just crazy to see how that happens, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this extension talk and all that stuff happens through the next year and a half. And like I mentioned, hopefully I'll be able to get some guys on to talk about that during the All-Star break, because I think it would be a lot of fun. Today's episode of the All Angels podcast is brought to you by SportsDrink, your digital water cooler. SportsDrink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They are here to help us grow and hate your favorite team. A rising tide floats all boats, so go check them out online and on social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in @SPRTSDRNK, spelled like sports drink without the vowels. So for this second half of the podcast, I am jumping on Instagram Live to see if anyone has any questions or anything about this series or just about the Angels in general. Obviously, I just talked about it. Shohei Ohtani had an absolute dominating performance, which I think a lot of Angel fans would agree that it's always almost it's always must-see TV when Shohei takes the mound, because you just feel like it's something special is going to happen every time he does. And then, like I mentioned before, Angels PR finds these kind of odd stats or odd things that has happened in the past years and years that Shohei's now doing. It's pretty crazy. So we'll wait for some of the questions to come rolling in on our Instagram Live. Again, if you want to follow us on Instagram Live, you can follow us at Halo_Haven is our Instagram feed, and it's our Twitter feed, and we'll jump on here from time to time to talk to fans about the Angels season or what's going on with the Angels. But something that I kind of want to talk about too is the biggest news around Ohtani right now, obviously, is the extension. What happens with the extension? What are the Angels willing to pay or should pay for this extension with Shohei Ohtani? And when you have an outing like he had on Wednesday night, or Wednesday evening, if you will, because of the time change, it is very easy why you see he will demand so much money when his time comes. And I've always said it too. He definitely deserves it. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt that he deserves a big contract that he should be getting. For people that are not aware, Shohei Ohtani is under contract for the rest of this year, and going into next year is his last year of arbitration. So the Angels right now are guaranteed to have another year and a half of Shohei Ohtani before he hits the open market. The question is, when do they start talking extension, and what does that figure look like? And honestly, what does Ohtani want? There is, I talked about it earlier, and the Ohtani book, Showtime, the one by OC Register's Jeff Fletcher, he goes very much into detail about the recruiting process for Ohtani the first time around when he came from Japan, what the Angels did, what he liked from the Angels, what, you know, what drew him to the Angels. Because if you remember the season before Ohtani came to the Angels, the Angels weren't exactly killing it. They weren't exactly the team that was, you know, close to the playoffs necessarily, but he still chose the Angels then because of what he felt as far as a community and a team around him. Artie should sell the team. Well, he's not, so it doesn't really matter if he should sell or not. It's Artie. He's not going to. We'll see what happens with that. But the same people, if you read the book and you read the part about his recruiting process, Socha had a big part of it. Epler had a huge part of it too. Those guys made Ohtani feel very, very comfortable with the Angels when he was coming over to Japan. And I'm really interested to see what the selling pitch is going to be for Ohtani now after what was last year's MVP, unanimous MVP season. And honestly, right now, the way he's pitching, the way he's playing, it could be very easily back-to-back MVPs going into next season. Angels traditionally don't wait for that last year to negotiate. Normally, and this is going back to when Trout signed his deal, normally that last year prior to becoming a free agent, they get something done before that. But if you remember Trout's deal, they went all the way through spring training and then announced it like 3 days before the season started. Angels are traditionally very quiet about these things. They don't have a lot of leaks that get out to people. So would I be surprised if in early April next year, are we talking about an extension? Yes. But I'm just really, really interested to see what the selling pitch or what will be the selling pitch for the Angels. And I've said it before too, is that I don't think Ohtani is the type to have his head in the sand and not recognize what's around him. I'm sure he recognizes the team and what's around him right now, some good, some bad. But I wonder how much of his decision will come from the future. Obviously, I think everyone wants Ohtani on the Angels for the foreseeable future and beyond. And with that comes the opportunity to have some of these younger guys in the minor leagues right now develop and become great players for the Angels. And quite honestly, if the Angels are going to produce a winning team with Trout's contract, Rendon's contract, and Ohtani's contract, they need to have young, cheap talent around them. And honestly, if that is something the Angels are now developing, they will have that. Yes, Ohtani does want to win. But like I said before, when he first came to Japan, it wasn't like the Angels were knocking on the door of a World Series by any means. So yes, I'm sure he wants to win. But like he said, or like Jeff Fletcher said in his book about Ohtani and that recruiting process, it was much more than that when he came over here. It was the culture of the city. It was, he didn't want a huge media presence. He didn't want a bunch of media members knocking down his door trying to get interviews. So yes, I'm sure him wanting to win is a part of it. But if you look at what brought him to the Angels originally, there was so much more than just that. And I wonder if that is still there, if that is still what he looks for besides the winning part. I think, you know, it's funny because every free agent out there will always say they want to win. You never heard a free agent ever say, oh, I want to lose, but hell, they're paying me a bunch of money. So, yes, I'm sure Ohtani is saying the right things. I want to win. I want to win. And I'm not saying that's not the truth. But point me to the first free agent that said, I don't care if we win. I just want to get paid. But we'll see what happens. But I do think the Angels will re-sign Ohtani. My biggest question after that is, what do they do with pieces around him? Kai Bush just got invited to the Futures game, All-Star Week, which is a great start. You've had guys like Joe Adell, Reed Detmers. You've had, you know, I'm trying to think the last guy before that. You've had good Angel guys pitch in that Futures game, which is like the best of the best, regardless of your level in minor leagues. And he can be a very easy guy to fit into that rotation in years that is coming up. Again, you're going to have so much of your salary chewed up by Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon. You're going to need guys like Kai Bush and Sandoval and, you know, Warren Blakely. You're going to need so many of these young guys to come up and perform right away when their time's called, so that you're not stressed about getting free agents. And I've said this plenty of times on the podcast, and I've said it plenty of times to people who ask me, when you look at how to build a team, or what is a winning team, I guess, if you will, you need to start from the ground floor. And I think that's in the minor leagues. Trying to get free agents to fill in gaps, I think, is like kind of like one of those get rich quick schemes. Like, oh, it might work, it might not, but more times than not, you're going to end up broke. And I think that's what the Angels have been trying to do, because they felt the pressure to win around Trout, that they're trying to do these get rich schemes that have not worked at all, instead of really focusing on what a good team is. And that is great minor league system. And from that, you can plug guys into play. You can trade guys for guys you need. But I think Perry is now finally doing that. You're seeing that he's putting a lot of effort in player development. But the bad thing about player development is that it takes a while before it gets to the major league level. And that's just the way it works. But you're finally starting to see it with the Trash Pandas and some of the guys in your A division and your AAA division, that they are actually starting to perform very well, that are drafted homegrown guys. Did Miami hit us on purpose? No, I doubt it. Just because people get hit doesn't mean it's on purpose. I think people are going to get hit throughout the years. And that's just baseball right now, because people are more concerned about pitchers throwing max effort instead of trying to locate pitches on the corners. And let's be honest, if you want to get Trout out, you know, you do want to pitch him inside. Granted, you don't want to miss up, you know, and if you miss down, there's a good chance he puts it over the wall. But I do think you do have to pitch Trout in if you want to try to get him out. And a side effect of that, especially with pitchers with not great accuracy, is that you're going to hit a guy every once in a while. So I doubt that Miami hit Trout or anyone on purpose. What do you think? What do you think about calling up Wallach since Stassi has been slumping? I don't like it. Stassi is still the best catcher in the system. I know everyone loves Wallach for whatever reason, but it's not like Wallach is a rookie hotshot gonna come up and perform. This guy is still he's a journeyman catcher, so I don't feel that he's going to be the type of guy that is going to fill in a gap for Stassi. Again, I still think Stassi is the best catcher on the team for the Angels. And just so you know, Chad Wallach is, Chad Wallach is an older guy. And it's, again, he's not like he's a young buck. He's 30 years old. He's not a rookie. He's not a second-year player. He's a guy that's been bouncing around from team to team. He wanted to come and play with his home team. He went to Cal State Fullerton, but I don't think he's an answer. And if you look at his AAA numbers, great, but AAA is a very friendly hitter's friendly ballpark. And I think transitioning from there to here, from the majors, is something that is very hard to do. And I just don't think you get better once you turn 30. I think once you hit 30, you are who you are, or you're on your way down. What are the chances of a shortstop signing with this offseason? I think a lot of it's going to have to do with Ohtani. Again, they're not going to have a ton of money to go out there and start buying up a bunch of free agents if they're planning to sign Ohtani. You're just not – again, you need your system to start benefiting things. And that free agent signing needs to be like the cherry on top, cannot be the main focus. And I think the Angels have done that too much, making free agents the main focus instead of making the farm system and the minor league system and treating the minor leaguers right. I think that's where they've been really messing up. They need to start doing that. They need to start investing in their future. What are your thoughts on Marsh at center? I think eventually it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I don't think it's going to happen next year, but I do definitely see it. There is a time where Marsh will be out in center field for the Angels for sure. Would you try trading or signing a catcher? Not at this point. No, I would not. Again, catcher is a very hard position, not only to evaluate, but to even just to find a good one. You're doing so many different things that, you know, right now in the major leagues, it's, you know, like one or two catchers are like the best catchers in baseball. And then a huge gap, and then you have like the third, fourth, and fifth catchers. Like, there's not a lot of great two-way catchers out there. Usually they're great at one thing and not the other. And it's very, very rare to find a catcher that does both. So if you tell a guy like, oh, he's like the fifth best catcher, that's not saying a whole lot because there's a huge gap between like the top three and everyone else. So catcher is just a really, really hard position to develop, to maintain, and just to find. Catchers are really, really hard to find. Do you think we should trade Adele for a guy like Montas or Taylor Miley? The thing about the trade deadline and the Angels, and I said this before on the podcast, is I'm not sure. I don't think if I'm the Reds general manager and I'm – or Montas and Oakland, I don't know if I'm sitting around my phone waiting for the Angels to call, knowing what their farm system is. And there's a bunch of farm systems. Just look at the teams that are in contention for that last wild card spot as we sit right now. So in the NL, or in the AL, sorry, you have Cleveland, Seattle, Chicago, Baltimore, Texas, and the Angels. There's a bunch of teams in there that could use pitching, especially if you're looking at Minnesota, who's leading their division, and they might need to add a pitcher. Same thing with Tampa Bay. They might want to add a pitcher too, and they all have better farm systems. And then you go down to the NL, and this NL is going to be really, really interesting because you look at the Dodgers without Bueller, the Mets. If now Scherzer and DeGrom come back healthy, then it might be a different issue. But you have teams like Atlanta, Philadelphia, St. Louis, San Francisco, who are all in on that last playoff spot, that all have better farm systems than the Angels. So if I'm one of these teams that are that have a key pitcher for free agent market, the Angels aren't on my first call list. I'm going through all these other teams that have better farm systems and the Angels before I get to there. So I just think, yeah, they will call and be like, hey, what's the price? But I just think the price is going to be met by another team with better prospects and more prospects to offer than the Angels. So the trade deadline, I don't think is going to be the way the Angels solve this problem, just because, like I mentioned, they don't have a ton to trade with comparatively to other teams who are in need of starting pitchers or whatever. So Joe Adell could be a good piece to look at as far as trading wise, but I'm sure, you know, you look at San Francisco, I'm sure they have other pieces that are just as good, if not better. Same thing with St. Louis, same thing with, you know, Milwaukee or the Dodgers, definitely the Dodgers. The Dodgers need another starter because they don't feel comfortable with Walker Buehler coming back. They have a really good system, and that's going to be like shopping in Whole Foods compared to like Walmart or something like that. For a backup, so when Stassi isn't there anymore. I mean, Stassi is probably going to be gone at the end of the year. I'm guessing you're talking about Chad Wallach. We'll see what Chad is next year. I wouldn't be surprised if Chad's even with the Angels next year. It's just kind of one of those things. Ward, Adell, Marsh, never the answer for the Halos. I think it's way too early to tell anything about those young guys. My guess, Ohtani walks, Rendon injured again, and Reed Detmers blows an elbow. All right, guy. There's always one guy that likes to talk way too much. This might be a strange question, but do you think the catchers known the strike zone better than anybody? So why does it seem like a lot of them struggle offensively? I don't know. And that's crazy. You kind of think maybe it's the view. Maybe it's different between the side view from where you're in the batter's box and like when you're actually catching is my only guess. But two, you're spending a lot of time behind the plate. Your legs aren't really there. That's very something really interesting. And I would love to ask a catcher, like a former catcher, why that is so hard for a catcher, because you do see a lot of pitches. You do see a ton of pitches daily. You think you would know more and more of the strike zone, but that's a very good question. I'm not sure why they're not more consistent. Let Stuffy go. Stefanik is better. I'm not sold on that yet. Stefanik is still very, very raw. Stefanik is still a guy that you have to kind of let play out a little bit. You're talking about a guy that's 26, so he is fairly young, but you know, you just have to hope, yes, his hit tool translates. If his hit tool does translate, and I think that's the biggest question mark right now, is that if Stefanik's hit tool translates to the majors, then yes, he's going to be someone that's going to be very good. But like so many people before him, and I'm just not talking about Angels, I'm talking about just certain minor leaguers in general in the past, I want to see that translate, because sometimes it doesn't always translate. And then if that doesn't translate, he's not going to be much of a value. How old is Stefanik? Stefanik is 26 years old. He turned 26 in February, so this whole season he'll be 26. So again, he's not old, but he's not like super young either. So if Stefanik's hit tool does translate to the majors, then yes, you do have something there. I just have to see it first before I'm willing to just outright be like, yes, he is the answer. Yes, he's going to be the starting second baseman for the Angels in the future. I don't know that yet. And again, he hasn't had a ton of at-bats yet for the first handful of games he's been up. I'm looking at it right now for this season so far, only 7 at-bats, 3 hits, which is good. But again, we're going to need a lot bigger sample size with Stefanik. A lot bigger sample size over for Stefanik to see what he has. Angels sign Ohtani, yes or no? I say yes. I think they do. But I guess I should say this. The Angels are definitely going to try. I guess it comes down to Ohtani, and Ohtani is super private. Ohtani doesn't talk to any press at all. So I don't know what he's thinking. I'm sure no one really knows what he's thinking. I'd take Renjifo over Stefanik. I just say that now because I think it's better to know what you have than what you don't know. And again, if Stefanik starts getting warmed up and that hit tool does transfer over to the majors, then yeah, I would take Stefanik over Renjifo at that point. Renjifo has had a lot of opportunity to pick up that position, the second base position, and take it. And he hasn't. He's had glimpses of where he's looked really good. And you're like, oh my God, this is it. He's finally turning the corner. And then he has an error today on Wednesday for that first run of the game. And you're thinking like, oh, maybe not. Renjifo has had opportunities. I think Stefanik needs opportunities before you're really able to compare and contrast those two guys. But right now, if you're saying right now, one of them has to go, I will say Stefanik, just because Renjifo is more of a known player than Stefanik is. But if you were to ask me that question at the end of the year, when Stefanik possibly has more at-bats underneath his belt, that could be something totally different. I think right now it's too early to tell, because if Stefanik's hit tool translates to major leagues, then you have something. If it doesn't, then he's just another guy, and I don't think he's any better than Renjifo. So Renjifo ain't it. I think he's had a fair share of opportunities. I kind of think he has and hasn't either. Renjifo, I think, might be one of those guys that's going to be a really good bench player or a really good guy off the bench. He might not ever be a everyday player, and that's fine. That's still further along than anyone watching this ever has done, so that's great. But as of right now, the way we're talking, the way the season's playing out, you need one or the other. That's just kind of how the roster is set. But yeah, in an ideal world when you can pick who you want to play those certain positions, and you're right, he's probably not the guy, but for what it is right now, he's what the Angels have. When does Fletcher get back? All the reports right now about Fletcher is after the All-Star break, so you're looking at a late July. And I don't know if that means late July he'll start playing with the Angels, or if late July means he'll go on a rehab assignment, maybe play, you know, a week's worth of games to kind of get going, and then back with the Angels in the beginning of August. They just kind of threw the timetable out there at the end of July. So we'll see what that means. If that means minor league stint, or if that means just flat out going with the Angels. But it's going to be really, really interesting what they have going forward. How many games Angels win at the end of this year? Right now, as we sit here, they are obviously they won today. They won. They took the split against Miami. They're sitting at 38-45. That is what, 7 games below 500 right now. I think they do get the 500. I think there's too much talent on this team not to get the 500. I don't think they get to the playoffs, but I do think they get to 500. Maybe give or take 1 or 2 games, but I'll see what I'll be surprised if it's better than that. I wonder when we are going to call up Jeremiah Jackson, and we still have Jordan Adams. I mean, those are names for sure. So Jeremiah Jackson has been with the Trash Pandas for about 2 months now, maybe a little bit longer. Jordan Adams has just recently got called up to the Trash Pandas. That's a AA affiliate, I think 2 weeks ago. Those guys are names. Yes, those are guys that were drafted because they were high school guys and they were crazy. And they still are crazy athletic, but you're hoping for them to develop. And hopefully now with Perry's player development staff in place, those guys are able to now start taking better steps forward, because both guys last year had a very tough season. And I think that's why you see those two names especially kind of drop from like top 100 list or top prospect list, because they did have a very rough 2021. Hopefully now with this team, this development staff being better, Adams and Jackson are able now to take the next step. Because yeah, it'd be great to have Jeremiah Jackson play third base or second base. I don't know if he translates to a shortstop right now, but have him in the infield with his power. And Jordan Adams can be a great outfielder, maybe a trade piece kind of outfielder. Or if they do trade Adell, he can be the guy that fills in after Ward. I don't know. But you do hope that those guys who were drafted because they are crazy athletes take the next step in AA. Small sample size, obviously, but I like Stefanik not looking above his head so far. I think he finishes his year on the Major League roster. I'm really interested to see if he does finish on the Major League roster, just so you are able to see a huge sample size. I think a lot of that is going to be performance, because you're going to have Duffy come back eventually. You're eventually going to have Fletcher come back. So you're going to have to start making moves, and so we'll see what happens. Lorenzen hurt. So I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but I'll talk a little bit right now. All they said was physical. They're checking a physical issue. They didn't say what it was. They didn't say how serious it was. That's why Reed Detmers is getting, not called up, but he's getting added to the taxi squad out in Baltimore. Lorenzen is scheduled to pitch Friday. If he's not able to start for whatever reason, Detmers will take that start. They already said that. But as far as he hurt, I don't know. They said he went for a checkup or went to go check some things, and they have yet to determine what it is. If it's serious, if it's not serious, if it's what it is. So definitely, and I've said this all the time, if you're watching us on Instagram Live and you have a Twitter, go follow Jeff Fletcher. Go follow Sam Blum. Go follow Rhett Bollinger. Go set their tweets on alert, so you are getting the news as it's coming out, because those will be the first guys to know if Lorenzen's seriously injured, if he's going in the IL, if he's not going on the IL, if Detmers is making a start. Those are the guys that will know for sure. But definitely check out Friday. Friday's going to be the big question. Is Detmers going to start or Lorenzen? Because I'm guessing Detmers is flying out there right now to Baltimore. He has to make that long plane ride from Salt Lake to Baltimore. Good thing that he doesn't have to worry about playing on Thursday. He'll have a day to rest even if he does start on Friday, so that's a good thing. But Baltimore, they should be able to take three of four from Baltimore at least. But I said that last time, and Baltimore ended up sweeping the Angels. So Baltimore is playing a lot better than the Angels right now. They are surprising a lot of people. But that's going to wrap it up for this Instagram Live. Again, if you follow us here, great. Thank you. And if you could help us spread the word of the podcast, check it out. Coming out on Thursday morning, we'll talk about what happened this last year or this last series, and at the end of what's coming up for the series against Baltimore. What contract do you think is worse, the Pujols contract or the Rendon contract? Right now, right, Rendon, because he hasn't played that much. But if Rendon gets if a miracle happens and Rendon stays fairly healthy the last couple years of his contract, then it can be the other way around. But Rendon isn't a finished picture yet. Albert had fairly good years his first year with the Angels and bad years the last part. If it's flipped with Rendon, then I guess it would be a draw. My honest opinion, I don't think the Angels will be able to sign Ohtani for a $500 million contract, as bad as it will hurt. Should we trade him for all the prospects? Now, I don't think you get a lot of prospects for Ohtani, and that's crazy. I know. I will say this. I'm not sure how many prospects you get for only a year and a half of Ohtani, because then that team is in the same situation the Angels are in right now. Can we re-sign him? Should we re-sign him? And I don't know if a team's willing to – they'll give up prospects. They will give up, you know, maybe a couple of their top five prospects. But I think when fans say we need to trade Ohtani for a bunch of prospects, they're thinking like you're going to be able to walk into their farm system and pick out like five, six, seven people. And I don't think that's what's going to happen for Ohtani and for if they trade him. I don't think they will. But again, I'm really hoping to have someone on during the All-Star break, one of the writers, a couple of the writers, to talk about that more and kind of what the options are for the Angels at that point, because the trade deadline is August 2nd or August 3rd, somewhere around there, first couple days of August. So thank you very much for following us on Instagram Live. Please check out the podcast when it goes live on Thursday morning. All right, so before we go, I just want to give you guys a little heads up about the schedule coming up for the Angels. As you listen to this, the Angels are getting ready to play a four-game series out in Baltimore against the much improved and quite honestly surprising Baltimore Orioles. The first pitcher on the mound for the Angels is Chase Silseth, still a guy with that I think honestly is a work in progress, but I think there is very positive signs of what he can be for the Angels going forward. He is far from a, you know, finished product, but I do think there are positive signs, and hopefully he's able to get a little deeper into games compared to his last start, where I think he got into the third, maybe 3 2/3 innings or something like that, somewhere around there, his last time out. And he is going against Jordan Lyles of the Orioles. He has a 4-7 record with a 4.70 ERA with 77 strikeouts. Now going to Friday's game. Again, these are all East Coast games, so they're a little bit earlier than we are accustomed to. But the Angels did just get done playing the Marlins, and so we should be kind of used to the starting time now. This one is going to be interesting on Friday. And I say that because Michael Lorenzen is slated to make the start for the Angels, and I've talked about Michael Lorenzen's struggles over the last month plus now, and what I think should or maybe might need to happen. Well, and I say it's interesting because of the fact that today, as I record this on Wednesday, Reed Detmers was supposed to make a start out in AAA Salt Lake, and Sam Blum of The Athletic was actually there in person to check it out and to probably talk to Reed and all that stuff afterwards, but he was scratched before the game in Salt Lake, which obviously meant one of two things. A, he was traded, which I originally thought was very, very, very unlikely. Or two, he's getting some kind of a call up and maybe he'll be back in the rotation sooner rather than later. We'll come out after the Angels game and asking the Angels brass, if you will, why the move for Reed Detmers. Comes out that Reed Detmers is joining the Angels in Baltimore on the taxi squad right now. But what can change is on Friday. Detmers is going to be there is as in a just in case pitcher, because Michael Lorenzen is getting checked out for what they're calling just a physical issue. They didn't really specify if it's shoulder or a elbow or like a lower body or whatever. They didn't specify what he's getting checked out, but he is quote unquote getting checked out for a physical issue. And if he's unable to pitch on Friday, it is very likely that you will see Detmers activated and pitch against Baltimore on Friday. So that is definitely something to look out for and see if Lorenzen's healthy, and if he's not, maybe that is an issue that has been bugging him for the past month and has really hurt his pitching performance. And, you know, if he does sit out or does go on the IL, and gives Detmers another opportunity to show what he's able to do on the MLB level. So again, Friday's going to be really, really interesting to see and see how or see who's going to pitch that game for the Angels. Now going to Saturday, you have Patrick Sandoval on the mound. He is 3-3 with a 3.09 ERA. And Dean Kramer is on the mound for the Orioles. He is 2-1 with a 2.48 ERA with only 23 strikeouts. So he's still a fairly new pitcher. And honestly, you know, with Camden Yards being a little bit, I don't know if you've ever seen Camden Yards' original photo of it, but if you look at the outfield compared to last year to this year, if you noticed, the left field has got taken back quite a bit and is a little bit bigger in the outfield now. So it's not as hitter friendly as it normally has been in the past. Is that going to help the Angels or hurt the Angels? It's going to be something to kind of pay attention to going forward. Then obviously Sunday, the last game, the getaway day, Jose Suarez on the mound once again with a 1-2 record with a 4.30 ERA against Austin Wolf. I'm pretty probably jacking that name up. He's 0-1 with a 7.20 ERA. Honestly, you know, I hate to say it, because the last time the Orioles came to Anaheim, the Orioles handled the Angels very convincingly and sweeping the series. So would I love the revenge tour, if you will, with the Angels sweeping four games in Baltimore? Absolutely. But I think realistically, the way this team has been playing and how hot and cold this offense is, if they go 3-1, I think that's going to be a big plus going into the last week of the season, or the first half of the season. Sorry. So 3-1, I think, is a really realistic goal for this team coming out of Baltimore. But we'll see what happens. Baltimore, again, is surprising a lot of people and is actually playing very, very well. So quick two for people that are planning to watch this game on Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 a.m. because again, they're on the East Coast. This game will be televised on Peacock app. I don't even know if I have Peacock app, but it's another one of these streaming games. I've never seen a game on Peacock. I don't know if it's any good. I don't know if it's better than Apple TV or YouTube that was last year or anything like that. But if you're looking for the game Sunday morning with your breakfast, definitely going to need to download the Peacock app. And I'm pretty sure it's free, but don't quote me on it. I'm not sure how this is going to work, but that is somewhere where that's where you can find the game exclusively on TV on Sunday morning on the Peacock app. So I'll put a reminder out there probably Saturday for Sunday's game, because I'm not sure how many people know about it, but that's where you can find it. And right after that night, we'll be recording another episode of the All Angels podcast to recap this series against the Baltimore Orioles. And again, if you have any questions or anything like that, you can always DM us on our social media feed, Halo_Haven, and that is both on Twitter and on Instagram. And then two, again, if you guys want to leave a voicemail or anything like that, the option's always open, 951-384-0810. The number will be in the description of this podcast. Again, 951-384-0810. And we'll be recording the podcast Sunday night after the Baltimore Orioles series. And you guys will be able to listen to it Monday on another off day for the Angels before they come back, or while they are coming back to Anaheim to finish out the first half of the season. So that's going to do it for this episode of the All Angels podcast. Again, we'll be back Sunday night. Again, remember our social media, Halo_Haven on Twitter and on Instagram. And I am Dan Garcia, and this has been another edition of the All Angels podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.